Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome, it's Sunday. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, co-host, producer, board monkey, Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
You know, Dave, what the show needs is more celebrities. Dave, Mr. Big Shot, Mr. I'm out filming a TV show. Why don't you lean on one of your paranormal buddies to get a real celebrity on this show? Well, I did it, Tim. I did it. I had to pull a lot of strings and make a deal with the devil, but I got a celebrity to meet with us on the show today.
It's about time. I only have people yelling at me, too. I mean, you know, it's about time, Mr. Big Shot, Mr. Celebrity, Mr. Hollywood.
I can't even say that, really. I mean, because our next guest, she's been on Ghost Hunters Academy, Ghost mm-hmm. Hunters International, Hipster Haunts. She was part of the Dark Zone on the program Is It Real? And now she's on the hit Travel Channel TV series Paranormal Caught on Camera, so popular that during the first season, they ordered 22 new episodes for season two, and that'll be coming out soon. So she's with us now, Susan Slaughter. Susan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dave. Hi. Thanks for
having
me.
How are you doing? Oh, it's great to finally connect with you.
Great. Doing great. Living the life.
Well, let's, you know, I want to.
Investigating the dead.
Yeah, that's always the plus side of our lives. But I want to start off at the beginning. Before Ghost Hunters Academy and Ghost Hunters International and everything, did you have an active interest in the paranormal, or was it just kind of I like that show. Yeah, I'll try out for that.
I've been investigating the paranormal since I was 15. And yeah, I've been doing it since, you know, before the Ghost Hunter days, for sure. I was part of a paranormal team in Miami. I hopped on board professionally with them as an investigator in training when I was 18. And then I did watch the show Ghost Hunters, and I was definitely aware that that was something I wanted to do on a broader level. And so when I saw that they were casting, I was watching an episode of Ghost Hunters, and you see at the bottom of the screen scrolling in little letters was like, "We're casting new paranormal investigators. Reach out," you know. And so I did, and they contacted me back. So that's how I got on Ghost Hunters Academy.
And taking that step, I mean, you know, the first kind of real foray into television to do this, was that an intimidating factor to go from, you know, private investigating, we can sit there bored all day long, all night long. But on TV, there's kind of this pressure that, boy, you know, I sure hope something happens, or this is going to be really a short-lived series. Was it different for you doing TV as opposed to real-world investigating? And not that it's not real-world investigating. They just pare down 8, 12, 15, 22 yeah. hours of investigating into a 22-minute slot. But what was that like for you in that transition?
Well, initially, I kind of was in this bubble where, I started investigating as I would with my home team. And, you know, there was no pressure initially to capture anything. You know, I was still new to the whole television game, and the pressure wasn't on to, like, actually get results until I joined the international team. But, you know, when you're traveling abroad, and you have so much history and so many different locations, that was actually pretty easy to come across, you know, like, and also the good thing about Ghost Hunters that I really liked, it's not like the other paranormal shows out there. There wasn't a pressure to capture a ghost or an entity or like any type of phenomena, because part of the whole idea of Ghost Hunters was education on like being a skeptic and also debunking things, because not everything is a paranormal experience. So that
Wait,
was what? Part of the show.
Wait, know? What? Not yeah, everything is paranormal?
Well, today everything's a demon, actually. Haven't you got the memo?
I have, and luckily we threw it out and shredded it. But no, you're right. There is that interesting aspect of you know, reexamining it. And there, you know, listen, some of the most exciting holy shit minutes are when something happens that you think is paranormal and that rush of adrenaline. But in a lot of times, I really like that when you sit there and then let your mind start working and start really going into examination mode, mm-hmm. finding the answer for what really caused this to occur. And when it isn't paranormal, I feel just as thrilled to have realized we found the source for what appears to be happening. So maybe we can still give answers to the homeowners, business owners, or the people that are inquiring about the paranormal activity. Do you get that kind of rush as well?
I do. I have a real big interest in history. I love the history of places. That's my, you know, I love going into a place and like kind of, for lack of a better term, get intimate with like what I like to put myself in that place in the time period. I get in the mental space, you know, like if I'm at an old bar that like, you know, went through like the Prohibition era and like had like speakeasies, you know, I like to think of myself as being there in that moment. I kind of get lost in time travel through like all of the locations I investigate. I find that to be the most interesting aspect. Of course, like, you know, the plus side is finding something there that's interesting and can't be explained away as like a speck of dust or, you know, like a lens flare.
But it can be scary specks of dust, Susan. It can be very scary specks of dust.
Yeah, because all those specks of dust are demons, right? I'm just going to keep calling everything a demon. Everybody does that now.
It's good for TV. you did the Academy. I mean, it was kind of a competition, fun show. Or was it? You know, I saw that there were tensions and some weirdness from time to time. But is that just the way the edit was cut? Or was there just, you know, trying to deal with all new people like a real world cast in the paranormal structure?
My experience on Ghost Hunters Academy, I came out of that experience with a ton of friends. As you know, like Carl Pfeiffer, who you worked with too, with, you know, the Dark Zone stuff and Is It Real? And he is a lifelong friend because of that. And most of the, like everybody that I worked with, you know, on the show was, they're all amazing, incredibly talented and, you know, incredibly smart individuals. Like, I don't feel like anyone on season one of Ghost Hunters Academy was a weak link. That being said, of course, things get edited. You know, you have that one like low moment or that one kind of fail that they have to highlight to bring like the drama. But that being said, everybody got along at the end of investigations. We all worked together. We all hung out, you know, and to this day, like we all keep in touch. So I think, you know, that experience was really great. I've never had a negative encounter on that show ever. And even then, like that being said, you know, one of my mentors, Steve Gonzalez, he's still a really good friend of mine and I see him periodically and we hang out and we keep in touch. And, you know, like I loved the experience I had on the Academy. And if it weren't for that, you know, if it weren't for me gaining my stripes on that, I would have never gone abroad with the international team.
And working in the international realm, did you find that there was quite a difference in the way they perceive the paranormal and investigate it there?
Oh, yeah. That's the best thing about it. To be honest, I get kind of bored investigating in the States now that I had a taste of doing international, you know, investigations, because I mean, every culture you go to, they have their own, I mean, all the symbolisms are all different. The interpretations are all different. You know, like when you're investigating in the Caribbean, you know, the stories of, you know, their elemental energies and how they perceive like what, you know, spirits is incredibly different from like how Malaysians and, you know, Japanese people view their spirits. And then you go over into the UK and then you have like, you know, you start getting into, you know, like the history of like the Druids and the Celts. And like, it's just like, it's amazing. It's amazing to learn of all the different cultures that are out there and how they view all of the paranormal that is around them. And the activity is so different in each location. Like every country has like different types of activity and it boggles my mind because it leads you to think like, wow, this like giant living sphere that we live on really does resonate different types of energies depending on where you are. and the types of things and phenomena that you would capture, let's say, in Central and South America is like so different than the things you would capture in like Norway and like Scotland or even like in New Zealand. You know, I went all the way to New Zealand just to discover there is a haunted attic filled with, you know, raccoons.
Well, in finding these, right, getting up there to realize it's nothing but raccoons.
Yeah.
But when you're out there and you're encountering this, do they really look at these things as something other than what we call them, you know, ghosts, spirits, you know, demonic realm? Do they really have a different perspective, in your opinion, from what it is that they're dealing with?
Yes. A lot of the, it's funny because like for instance, in the UK, you have a lot of people that are dealing with like residual type of haunts from like people's energies being just kind of recorded and playing over and over and over again. You know, just because like these old castles and old fortresses, the type of stone that they were built with has a tendency to like hold on to like, I guess you would say types of phenomena that would be kind of considered, you know, residual haunts. You know, you see an apparition around the same time, you know, when like during certain phases of the moon or types of weather, you know, and then you go to, I went to Trinidad and you get like shape shifting, like shadow creatures, you know, and then, where's another one? A lot of,
when you say you go there and that's what they're encountering, did you see any of these for yourself when you were in Trinidad? Yeah, really? What was that absolutely. Like?
That was like just thrilling. I just found it so thrilling. I'm more interested in like encountering like non-human energies, because it just makes me realize that, you know, we are so used to seeing things that have physical bodies, and that's what we like believe in because we can see it. When you start encountering types of intelligent energies that have never been human, that have the ability to shapeshift, have the ability to like interact with your equipment in a way that they try to communicate intelligently, it like boggles my mind. And I got it like that, just like, you know, you think like you're gonna get answers when you do paranormal investigations. That's why we do it. Like, is there life after death? And then, you know, you come across these types of elementals, as I like to call them. Other people call them like angels or demons or however, you know. But I find that all of these energies they're pretty neutral. They don't have like any ill intent, but they're also not there to please you and jump through hoops for you and entertain you. You know what I mean? It's kind of like these sentient energies. It's crazy. Like when you come across things like that, it makes you think beyond the paranormal into like almost like extraterrestrial, or like what other types of energies and life forms are out there that just because we can't see it doesn't mean they don't exist, you know, just stuff like that is incredibly stimulating for me, you know, like mentally. I'm like, oh, great. There's the lady at white at the top of the stairs. You know, now I'm like so over the ghost, you know, I'm like more on to like, what are these, you know, ancient intelligent beings and what do they have to teach us? And how did they evolve to be this way? Are we under evolved as like, you know, meat bodies walking around? Like, I feel like these things are so like highly evolved to the point where like they don't even need like physical beings to be, you know, they don't need food. They don't need, I mean, what do they need to survive? Like, why are they here? Like, that just boggles my mind, you know?
I do. And you know, that you bring up a lot of really good points with that. Are these creatures not what we think they are, but just evolved sentient beings that have always existed here? It's just they're living in a different evolutionary plane.
Right.
So that's an interesting concept. Now, when you actually see these things that are shape-shifting and doing this in front of your eyes, does that, and I've known you for, I think, about 8 years now.
Yeah.
Ever seem like the type that's very easily shaken? Has there been some of these moments where you get, I hate to use the word frightened because it sounds silly, but I mean that you get uneasy or really frightened when something will occur?
I have gotten startled before by things, you know, where you're kind of like walking into a room and you don't expect that you're going to turn a corner and like a shadow person is literally right in front of your face. and then disappears. Like, it's, I have a lot of like startling experiences, but I don't fear anything that I've investigated. I have come across energies that have thrown like tantrums, you know, and even in those types of environments, investigative environments, where you've had like objects being thrown at you by things you cannot see, you know, even that to me is more like, it's kind of like talking down a, you know, like a pissed off kid, you know, or trying to counsel something, you know, so that way you can understand them a little bit more. When I come across like energy like that, you know, that it might seem a little hectic and frightening to some people, I find it's my responsibility as an investigator, as like a sensitive, as an empath, to kind of like change the energy. Because a lot of people don't realize that you can come across like some negative types of, you know, haunts and things like that. But those types, you can't get rid of energy. So that's why, like, I believe that it's your responsibility to help like counsel the energy and change it from being a negative manifestation to something more positive.
Now, having done this and had the rare opportunity to go to these different cultures, see these different things, interact with them, and witness it, do they, obviously the world is not based on the Christian principle. What right. are ways that they have in dealing with eradicating or removing these energies from these type of locations that you've actually seen work?
So, to be honest, I believe that a lot of the haunts and things, the negative haunts, you know, let's say in like a Catholic, let's speak in a Catholic sense, because most people here in the United States understand like the whole idea of what an exorcism is, right? So if you're having like negative haunts in your house, it's affecting you as a human, you know, it's affecting your stability, your mental stability, it's affecting your health, all those things. A lot of people don't realize that everything, I feel like the best way to describe it, it sounds weird, but I feel like we are all in like a big jelly, you know what I mean? So it's like, you could put fruit in like jello, but it's still encased, you know, in the jello, and that if you move things around, the jello can melt, you know, if you leave it out, things like that. But we're always touching something and interacting with energy at all times. Like, we're in that jelly, you know what I mean? And if you don't change your mental state, you know, through things like meditation, through positive reinforcement, through self-love, you're going to constantly get that negative energy attachment. And that happens with non-human energies as well as like, you know, passed on human energy, and whether people are dead or alive, like that energy is all fluid in the jelly, you know what I mean? And so in order to like start making a difference in your environment, you don't just use sage and be like, okay, the house is cleansed. You don't go, you know, like in churches and, you know, like burn copal and like, you know, all of a sudden you're cleansed. You don't throw holy water and all of a sudden you're cleansed. It's really the change of the environment, the change of the haunt, the change of the possession all comes from within. And people are, you know, just like you can be influenced by energy like haunts. You can also influence that energy back. So if you want to change a negative experience, if you're saying you're having a haunted home, you know, where things, you're dealing with poltergeist activity, things like that, I feel like it's within the people in the home to change their vibes and vibrations, you know what I mean, to positive ones. And that's how you honestly, you can't get rid of an energy. You have to change the energy. And in order to change the energy, you have to raise the vibration within yourself, you know? So that's my opinion on that. But it's really hard for people who don't have a sense of spiritual identity or a sense of, you know, how the body's vibrations can be raised. People that are not in tune with their like chakras and things like that, they don't realize that they are the conduit to all of these things, you know, and you just have to learn how to work your inner battery and change, you know, change your whole system in order to change the energies around you.
Has this investigation that you've been a part of for, you know, the better part of your life, has it altered your perceptions on death and what it means to die?
Absolutely. If anything, it's taken away my fear of death completely. Like at this point, it's like, you know, I feel like the most people, when they pass on, like I said, they just kind of, they kind of, shed it, you know, like a butterfly, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like a little pupa right now. Like, I feel like a little caterpillar. And when I'm dead, you know, my spirit, I shed this body. My spirit is the butterfly. And now I'm like the sentient beings that I've been investigating. You know, I feel like, you could, it's up to you to live your life. It's affected everything about how I live my life now too. It's like, how do I, when I die, not get stuck like some of these energies that I've captured, you know, on cameras, you know, and in video and on recordings. Like, I don't want to be this energy that's doomed to like repeat its living self over and over and over, even in the afterlife. You know, I'm like, how do I live my life now in a way that I can raise my vibration and that my energy, when my flesh body is done with, that I can, you know, transcend into, you know, like the ascended types of masters that we have, you know, that we talk of, like Siddhartha and Jesus Christ and, you know, Buddha and Shiva. And, you know what I mean? Like, that's how I want to live my life, you know, like to live my life. So that way, when somebody that's living, you know, in the future after I've passed on, that I can be, you know, a guide, you know, or a sentient spiritual being that can teach the living and help raise the vibrations of the planet, you know?
So you're taking the things that you're learning now in hopes of applying them in the afterlife.
Absolutely.
That's really great, because a lot of people, you know, most of us, myself included, I just want proof. I want definitive proof that I'm communicating with a disincarnate spirit, not something that's just a manifestation, reflection of our own psyche or a projection from our own mind. I think it's great that you've taken it to another elevated status, that what you're learning, what you're taking is something that you want to be able to use when you make that evolutionary jump.
And you said something right now, David, that I wanted to point out. You're like, how you're talking about how, like, projections from your own mind. How is it? I want to see a ghost. I want to see this. But to be honest, I feel like, you know how some people have the ability to feel and speak to spirits and they're psychic, and how, you know, if you've ever been on an investigative team, you have people that are always seeing phenomena and people that just don't see shit at all, you know? And I think that, to be honest, a lot of the phenomena out there, and a prime example, and I keep telling people this, is like poltergeist activity, demonic possessions, things like that. These are all mental projections, and it doesn't make them any less paranormal just because it comes from your mind. This is a psychic ability that we all, and when you have these projections, you know, and I noticed this because I was investigating with Paul Bradford on Ghost Hunters International. And to be honest, I learned a lot from investigating with him. He was an awesome team member because I was the sensitive case manager and he was the skeptical tech manager. So we were very different, but worked amazingly together in that respect because we had different experiences. We would experience a phenomena differently when we would see things. It's funny because we would literally be looking at something happening and I would see it as a ball of light and he would see it as like a dark mist. But we're literally looking at the same thing, but our brains and our eyes are seeing the phenomena in a different way.
Right, perceiving it completely differently.
Exactly. And it just goes to show you that it's like, okay, this is our perceptions of an energy that's in front of us. You know what I mean? And that is showing me that that's some sort of mental projection that we see. Like, we all have different abilities and capabilities of seeing the paranormal, or supernatural, I like to call it.
I find that, you know, in kind of what you're discussing, I understand that those are still aspects of the supernatural, if it is manifestations and projections from within us, but it's not the aspect that I guess I was looking to find. I, you know, I, yes, it's amazing if it turns out that I'm able to project, and as a species, we're able to, and maybe it's a protective or evolutionary security blanket that we're able to project these things to create something that makes other things perceive us differently. But you know, what the question really remains for many people is, what happens next? How is it when we die, and what does it mean to die? I did an interview the other day on Midnight in the Desert with a guest named David Sunfellow, and he's written a really remarkable book called The Purpose of Life as Revealed by Near-Death Experiences from Around the World.
Mm-hmm.
And the stories he was sharing in the interview, it was a different perspective of life and death and what it means to be alive and how we can make the best of this life. And so, you know, it's nice that I'm finding there's a continual evolution of learning that takes place in this field. It's not something that's just you and I are looking for guys in sheets running around in a building. You know, we're looking for things that might expose different aspects of what we are as humans and what it means to be alive. And in those moments, you know, it might give us the answers we seek. And I've got to tell you, I've had a lifelong fear of death. I've talked pretty openly about on the show since we started it. But after talking to David Sunfellow the other night, I have found this really unbelievable peace. This, you know, feeling that there's something new to the way that I perceive how life goes. And it was interesting because he was, again, coming at it from a Christian perspective. But when pushed, I said, do you believe that, you know, then if you're not Christian, but you still lead life well and you do good things and you have show concern for others, that, you know, you won't find the same thing. He said, oh, definitely not. He believed that it's really about the universal light of just being good, doing good. And really that's the focus of it. And right. That was really an interesting new concept, but I don't want to give too much away. I think it's a great episode if people want to go back and check that out on Midnight in the Desert. I did that on Thursday, but it's a really great topic, and I think people should check out the book. If you're someone like me that has had a fear of death, just the one-hour conversation with him certainly altered quite a bit of how I look at it. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm still not curious and want to know if these things bumping in the night are ghosts or something else entirely. And I've seen some just weird footage, as you and I have both witnessed when we were working with the Dark Zone. We did a little online series called Is It Real? Which now you do a much bigger version on Travel Channel called Paranormal Caught on Camera. But we examined some famous footage of paranormal activity, and each one of us kind of weighed in on what we thought might be going on and what we were looking for, you know, that fascinated us about the phenomena. And there's some things like video footage I've seen recently from what used to be a Baker's Square here in Minnesota that's been since torn down. This guy's been sending me video clips from their CCTV, and you see this shadowy figure walking around the kitchen. And why a Baker's Square? You see libraries where their CCTVs are sitting there, and you can see both sides of the aisles, and books just start launching themselves off shelves.
Right.
There's something there that is intelligent, that is influencing the environment around it. And that's the part that excites me, is, and what is it? And is it us outside of the flesh? Is it, like you said, maybe these evolutionary changelings that are coexisting with us at all times? And maybe we're not even on the same realm. Maybe it's not, maybe it's not our spirit that's out there doing these things, but something totally different.
Right. Something like coexisting in our three-dimensional plane, you know, or I like to think, like, you know, eventually I think of evolution a lot when it comes to the paranormal. And like, it's, I mean, I would love to like reference Interstellar at this point, you know, like that movie where, you know, if you've
right.
It, you know, like the books coming off the shelves and the girl thinks it's a ghost or whatever, that her room is haunted, but it just turns out that that's like her father trying to like reach out to her from the future, like, or into another time and space, from another time and space, you know. And so, because I believe that energy cannot be destroyed, it only can evolve or be, you know, change, you know, sides and vibrations, I think that maybe it comes down to, you know, maybe in the future when, you know, we don't have our bodies and we get to the point where we are just these intelligent beings, you know, that we can come back and forth. Like time is, you know, time and space is not linear for something that doesn't have a body that's just of intelligence. You know what I mean? So I feel like maybe when you start seeing things like poltergeist activity or things coming off of shelves or even like shadow impressions on cameras and things like that, who's to say that those are not, you know, the collective consciousness of us, or, you know, even, you know, ascended versions of ourselves coming back, you know? I mean, the biggest question, I think, the reason why we investigate the paranormal, the reason why we have religions, the reason why we have all of this spiritual, like everyone has a spiritual quest, is because there is a part of history that has been lost, that has just been completely like obliterated. And we have lost our memory of where we came from, of who we are. You know what I mean? There's like history, like kind of shuts off after a certain point of time. You know what I mean? So like we can't go deep enough in the past, but who's to say in the future, you know, when we evolve as human beings, that we can evolve, you know, to a point where we don't need, we can actually time travel and come back and be come back to our present state. We're living right now. You and me, we're having this radio show right now in 2019. You know what I mean? Who's to say that, like, maybe in 10,000 years as a human species, like, just like, you know, like, we can, you know, come back spiritually. We've learned, our brains haven't even evolved to the point where we use 100% of it. You know, we only use about 10 to 15% if we're very lucky. You know what I mean? Not even 15%. Right. I feel like it's like, you know, so our brains haven't even, we can't even fathom, you know, what 10,000 years would give us in evolution right now. You know what I mean? Maybe we will be able to, like, we'll learn how to take, you know, concentrated mental energy and project things, you know, project ourselves into the past, project ourselves into the future, and eventually evolve to the point where we don't even need bodies anymore to create and to procreate. I mean, it's crazy to me, you know.
Well, slow your roll there. All right. Now that's one of the parts of living I really still enjoy. Don't take that away from me, Susan.
What I think about living is actually really restrictive, you know? It's really restrictive. If you were just solid mental energy, you can go anywhere you want. You can live underwater. You can live in the sky. You can go to outer space. You wouldn't need oxygen. You wouldn't need food. You can literally experience life on a completely different level if you didn't have a physical being. You know what I mean? So I kind of find our bodies to be anchors. Because we haven't evolved yet to the point where we can transcend, you know. So eventually, you know, I think our energies get recycled and recycled and recycled. I do believe in reincarnation, you know.
Well, let's do this. We have to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue talking about the theories of the afterlife. But I'd also like to talk with you about some of the strange footage that you had a chance to review on Is This Real? The little webisodes that we did together, and on the new hit TV series on Travel Channel. And what do you make of that? We'll talk more with Susan Slaughter. But first, 60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just ponder the universe, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions, and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's just that easy. After that, you bring your car in, they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need, so there's never any surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. We'll be back with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Hey, everybody, you have to check out this amazing new true crime podcast. It's called 22 Hours, An American Nightmare. It's about a murder that took place in Washington, D.C. A family, their housekeeper, held hostage for 22 hours before being killed. When the murderers set their mansion on fire, you'll be shocked by what they went through during those 22 hours, and you won't believe how they found the guy. I won't ruin the ending, but all I will say is pizza crust.
I'm telling you, this is awesome. Keep an eye out for a special sneak peek extra episode this week here on Beyond the Darkness. And if you can't wait, download 22 Hours, An American Nightmare now on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. New episodes every Monday.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy over there hiding underneath the counter flipping through weird pictures of the paranormal, that's Tim Dennis. And on the line with us right now from the Travel Channel new series, Paranormal Caught on Camera, Susan Slaughter is here. Susan, there's been a lot of strange video that has been released. As a matter of fact, I'm going to reach out to your production company with some video that I captured from the Palm Hotel. I want to submit it. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, and probably one of the more alarming paranormal interactions I've ever caught. And I'd love for you guys to weigh in on that. So I'm going to be contact out. Maybe I'll chat with you off air about that and getting in touch with your production company. But you and I, we got to see some really cool and weird phenomena doing Is It Real? And, you know, some of it is very hokey looking. Mm-hmm. Some of it is unbelievably chilling the way it takes place. You know, when you're watching these different videos, what were some of the most shocking moments for you in filming the new series for Travel Channel?
Well, to be honest, so the difference between Is It Real and Paranormal Caught on Camera is, when we did our series, they wanted our opinions on whether we believed it to be real footage or not. Whereas Paranormal Caught on Camera, we just discuss the types of phenomena that is believed to be caught, and we don't really weigh in on, you know, whether we believe it's real or not. I mean, there are some pieces that I look at and I'm like, you know, the skeptical side of me like has an opinion on that. But that's not the purpose of Paranormal Caught on Camera. To be honest, the thing is like, The more footage that we have of things, I mean, it comes from the fact that we all have cameras in our pockets now, and we all have surveillance systems, and it's just like pretty. And you know, any investigator is going to use these tools. We have been using surveillance systems and DVR systems and things like that to be capturing, you know, phenomena. Now I'm all over the place, so all sorts of things are turning up. Plus, you know, we're capturing things that is just. Like now I'm reviewing things that are not just about paranormal, like it's not just ghost stuff, you know, like with Paranormal Caught on Camera, I get to review things like from the cryptozoological side of, you know, to the alien and like, you know, ancient, like UFO types, you know,
right, right.
Like, I mean, it's just all over the place. Like it's like, at this point, I'm like, am I really an expert to be weighing in on like these, you know, strange lights in the sky? Like, I mean, that's not really where my expertise lies, but it's widened my range, you know, like since being on the show, I'm reviewing all sorts of stuff. And we have all different types of people too. Like, Is It Real? It's all paranormal investigators. Whereas now I'm working with like crypto, specialists and ufologists and things like that. So it's kind of cool to kind of sit at a table with like all these different types of people with all these different interpretations of stuff going on. But to be honest, like, I hate to say it, and maybe it makes me sound so jaded, but it's like, I don't know, like what is the most terrifying or scary or unusual thing I've seen on the show? I have no idea. I feel like you kind of get a little desensitized when you've been doing this so much that it's like hard to put that into perspective.
Right, but then there's, you know, when we watch all the programs and you and I have been out there investigating, Tim and I joke about it too. We go to a live event and we've got newbies that have never done this before and they investigate with us and they get an EVP and it's a good one and it'll say something like, get out. And you're like, oh, that's great. And they're like, no, there's a voice. I'm like, yeah, I can hear it. And they're like, why aren't you more excited? I'm like, I've heard it. I need more at this point.
Yeah.
And in seeing some of the, but some of the phenomena you guys showed on Paranormal Caught on Camera, there was some really stunning and bizarre examples.
What are the ones that stick out to you?
Oh, cripes. Well, you know, we had talked about them too, and I can't remember the name of them. Those like walking stick figure things that
have been witnessed.
Yeah, the night crawler phenomena. That is a very bizarre visual. Yes. And I've watched the videos over and over. I want to make sense of it. I want to say that it's, just something in the wind blowing, but first of all, it's been seen in multiple places and caught on video. I can't wrap my head around it. What do you make of that kind of phenomena?
Well, to be honest, I've had my own experience with a night crawler.
No, really?
I thought you knew this. We're on the same show. I talk about it. I talk about it on Paranormal Caught on Camera too. To be honest, because I have seen this thing in person, I have to like disagree with what I'm seeing on camera. Like the recreation is kind of off. So I hate the term nightcrawler. I think it's a misnomer, like big time. You know what I mean? I saw at first what looks like, so I was in Yosemite, which is the area that you would see the nightcrawler. And I was staying at an inn right that I had a view of the Merced River. It went right in front of my suite. And in the middle of the Merced River is a giant boulder. And on this giant boulder is I thought somebody was fishing from the top of the boulder. It was nighttime. I could see clear as day because the moon, I know it sounds so cheesy. I mean, I listen to myself talk about this and I just like scoff at myself. So I can't even believe anybody else is going to believe me. It was on the night of a full moon. You know what I mean? It was high up. I could see everything. It was glowing off the river. I could see all the trees. You know, it was like moonlit, like completely moonlit. And I could see almost like it was daytime. And I was sitting outside marveling at the moon. I was like, wow, look at this. I can't wait to go on my hike. I was getting ready to go on like an epic Yosemite hike the next day. Like, and we were planning to do a night hike. So I was like, this is a great time. We kind of did it around the full moon because we wanted to have the most illumination. Anyways, that's neither here nor there. But this thing was like pacing back and forth on a giant boulder in the middle of the river. And at first I kind of ignored it. I didn't think anything. I was like, oh, somebody's like night fishing or whatever. And then it just kind of occurred to me, I was like, damn, that's a big ass rock in the middle of the river. How did that dude get up there? You know? And I'm just looking at this thing and I was like, how did he get up there? Like, geez, and why would you go fishing from the top of that boulder where you could just go right off the edge of the river? Like, that seems like, you know, like I just started thinking like how it didn't hit me at first, like how odd it is to see this, what I thought was just a man pacing back and forth on this thing. And as I'm looking, paying more attention to this thing on top of the boulder, I'm like, this guy's got no arms. Wait, this is not a man, you know, like this is weird. All of a sudden this guy doesn't have any clothes on. Like, what is this? This is like something to be honest, what it looked like to me was a wishbone, you know, like the shape of a wishbone, like the elongated torso, no arms, kind of had like a humanoid shaped head. And then two like lanky kind of bow legged legs. What was that alien movie that the aliens kind of bent their legs backwards? It's not Encounter.
Was that Signs?
Was it?
I think it might've been Signs with, it might've been War of the Worlds. I can't remember. They all start to blend together after a while.
Is it like Encounter of the Third Kind or I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
Encounters. Exactly. No, those just basically look like, you know what it is? The Fourth Kind, right? That's the horror movie that looked like a lost footage film.
Yeah, but you couldn't see the aliens in the Fourth Kind. I don't know. Any which way, it just like, it looked like a gray alien sort of, you know, but without arms and longer, like a skinnier stick figured gray alien without arms. The skin I noticed was kind of reflective. It almost looked like shark skin or like dolphin, you know, like that type of texture, almost like this slick kind of rubbery look to it. kind of like this brownish, like blackish gray. I don't know. It was kind of glowing under the moon. It was had this reflective property to its skin. And I was just like, I don't know what the hell that is. I didn't know, like, if I was just, because, like, I didn't know if it was something, I didn't know what I was looking at. To be honest, I wasn't even like, that's an alien, that's a creature, that's, I was just like, that's weird. I must be seeing things wrong. You know, I wasn't really looking at it thinking it was anything weird because it's kind of far away. And I was just like, maybe I'm just not seeing things right. Like, I don't even know how that guy got on top of the boulder. Anyways, it wasn't until like I go on the hike the next day that I, you know, stop at an information booth and they have these little pamphlet, like leaflet things there. And I was like, oh, the map's on it. And then it's telling you all the sites that you could see. If you go to Tuolumne Valley, you do all these things, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden I see these sculptures that apparently were carved by like Native Americans. And if you go deep enough within the Yosemite National Forest, you can see these sculptures and they are these like, they are in the shape of the thing that I saw the night before. And I'm like, I asked the person, I was like, where are these sculptures? What is this? What is this thing? And they're like, oh yeah, these are like elemental, like these were carved like, I forget. I don't want to give a number because I don't know, but
right,
I would
hundreds of years ago, right?
Like more than that, you know, and just, and they're like, yeah, Native Americans carved this. They're giant statues. Apparently they're protectors of the forest. And I'm like, what? Like what? I was like, I saw this last night. Like I saw one of these last night. What is this thing? And then that, like, I went on a freaking spiral down the rabbit hole. I went online. I started looking up. Oh my God, it's the Nightcrawler. I saw the footages that we reviewed on Is It Real? It came up again on Paranormal Caught on Camera. And I was just like, that's because I'd seen this. And because I've seen also the sculptures that the Native Americans did, it didn't look like they were wearing like white, flowy, wide legged pants. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
The color was off. It was not, that is not what I saw like on those, on the cameras. But that being said, you know, I have to, you know, be the devil's advocate a little bit. It's like, look, human beings, we come in all shapes and sizes too. You know what I mean? Like colors and variations, like maybe this is a different type of variation of a similar type of thing. You know what I mean? So I know what I saw. It looked like, you know, like a wishbone, kind of like a gray. It was there. I was looking at this thing for over half an hour and I didn't think anything weird about it until I saw that pamphlet at the information booth. And then I freaked my shit. Like, I was like, what is this? And then now I'm like, great. Like, you know, you have that encounter. And I used to scoff. I mean, I was that asshole at the conventions. I was just like, great. You know, like I've gotten in, I don't know if you know who Ben Hansen is, but like we get in little tiffs about like, what is Bigfoot and all these things, you know, and I've done panels with him and I'm just like, dude, you don't, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know about your Bigfoot, you know, but now that I've had my own crypto experience, like, I'm just like, whoa, okay. You just like opened Pandora's box for me. Everything's possible. What's going on in this planet? Like, I just, you know, like everything just like got thrown to the wind and I have to like start from scratch again on like all my theories, you know, like every time. And that's the thing about investigating the paranormal or doing anything in this field. When you think you got an answer, you're going to experience right. something that's going to flip that whole shit on its head. And it's just going to make you have right. more and more and more and more questions. You never find the answer in this field. Never. It's you. If you get into this, you have to be like completely content with just not knowing facts of like from fiction. You know what I mean? Like you just have to just take it and digest it and just that little inkling, that seed of knowledge that you just gain is going to sprout into this giant tangent that's never going to be solved.
Well, in looking at some of the videos, the other one that really jumped out at me that you guys featured was the world's most haunted
school. Right, in Ireland.
Right, that footage from Ireland. And Tim, I don't know, have you seen that footage?
I'm not sure if I have or not.
I'll send you the link while we're chatting here so you can review it for yourself. I thought we covered it on an episode of our show not too long ago, but it is some of the most stunning and compelling video footage. And I love that the school is just very resigned to it. This Irish school was having some weird things happen. They had CCTV put in. I think the principal was there that night, Aaron Wolf, And it was like in a meeting, and when he came out, everything was in disarray, and he went back to see who had snuck in, and he watched this whole thing unfold on video in front of him. Now, you and I have seen a lot of fakes. You've actually worked in the film industry. Mm-hmm. That footage is really stunning to me, especially knowing that it comes from a CCTV camera at a school, and it's not, you know, somebody's like art program or something that they're working on. What did you make of it when you first saw that?
I mean, so the thing is, it's hard for me to comprehend, because as an investigator, I mean, I have seen objects move, but it's always so subtle, and it's always like an inch over or like a centimeter this way. I've never seen things like fly open and get slung with force like that. You know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine that something without a body can be like stronger than me and lift chairs like that. I probably wouldn't be able to lift. You know what I mean? So it does boggle my mind. And, you know, I'm such an, can we use bad words? I'm trying to be good, but I'm having a hard time not using foul language.
Yes, yeah, that's fine. So this is a podcastable show. So kids, just earmuffs. Auntie Susan's going to go crazy right now, but go ahead.
You know that I'm not being foul mouthy. You know me in real life. I use
right, that. Right.
Okay. So I'm trying not to be an asshole, but if I didn't record it and if I wasn't there, like, I don't believe it. I'm like that person. You know what I mean? Like, I've come across so many people try to fake shit that I'm just like, I'm so jaded now. You know what I mean? So Right. It's like, I look at this stuff and I don't know whether to believe it or not. I'm just like, I know what the type of phenomena that's going on. And I know, but because I've never personally experienced something, you know, but that being said, you know, it's like, I'd have to have another moment where like something like that happens to me on an investigation or in my world where then I could believe it, but it's just like really hard for me because I've seen very subtle like things. Like, I've seen a door open by itself. You know, I've seen, you know, a like cigarette like move. Like, I've left trigger objects out and I've captured those objects moving on camera. You know what I mean? But it's always so subtle that I can't like imagine like something being like violently opened and lockers being shook, you know, just like, that's insane. That's intense. Like, I don't like what type of energy is doing that. What's the motive behind it? Like, you know, I have no idea.
Well, and here's now, had I seen that anywhere else, like you, my skepticism would have kind of kicked in a lot heavier, but due to the fact that it's at a school, and I'm sure it's not in the best interest of the school to perpetrate a hoax like that, because you wouldn't want your kids feeling like, holy God, there's something haunting our school. Right. I mean, so by them even being upfront about it, to me, shows that, that there's something to this. And, you know, listen, if so in life, so in death, if you were a teenager and you were at the high school, I think that would be my exact response, would have been tearing posters off the walls, knocking things over. And you're right. The video footage of the chair lifting up and then slamming down was pretty violently done. It's upsetting almost to watch in a degree, because it makes you wonder if there is some spirit trapped there. You know, what would be causing that kind of violent nature?
Well, I find that like, so what we're seeing here in like a video like that would be considered like poltergeist activity. And mm-hmm. I argue a lot with other people in the field about what poltergeist activity is. And I believe poltergeist activity be fueled by human psychic activity. I don't believe it to be a ghost of something departed or a demon or an elemental. Right. I believe it to be psychic energy and not something that people realize that they're doing. But if you think of, I mean, I fucking hated school. Like, going to school, stuff.
Agreed, right?
So bad for me, like, especially like middle school and high school was like some of the toughest times of my life, dealing with bullying, you know, like I, you know, being a little goth girl like I was, and like, you know, people were just not fucking nice to me, you know, and it was just, it was kind of like I feel like that was me. I could just imagine all my angst and all my, the energy and the imprint that I would leave behind every day. It was torture going there. And imagine you get like 3,000 students in a place that like have different versions of the type of torture you're going through, which is that type of energy leaves an imprint in an environment. And I think that when you have all of this like static energy coming from people, whether they know it or not, it leaves an imprint in the environment. And then you start, it manifests in a way where like things start opening and closing. You start getting that like frantic energy trying to like, it's bouncing around the room. And I think that's what causes poltergeist activity. A lot of the time,
right, it's that psychokinetic energy, the frenetic energy that's just thrown off from the chaos of the day. Right.
Yeah. I think that's what's happening. And when you're having poltergeist activity, and when people try to communicate, and also a way energy tries to put itself back together, because if you've ever looked at what real poltergeist activity, the real cases of poltergeist activity, it is not like doors opening and closing and things being thrown so much. It's like sometimes like things get placed in very particular ways. Almost like in code, like you will get things being stacked on top of each other, you know, not like doors being flown open. You get like, people would be like, wow, like I literally like heard some shit go down in my kitchen. I come in and all my dishes are stacked on top of each other in the middle of the kitchen from the floor up to the ceiling, you know, where it's very particular and organized, you know, and it's not so frantic. Because energy, if you look, like even in vibrations, everything has a pattern. Everything on this planet has a pattern and a vibrational like resonance that creates pattern. You see it in music when they do that little like grain test on like sheets, when they play different vibrations, you see it in flowers, you see it in snowflakes, you see it, everything has geometry. And I think the real that's why another thing is like some of the real poltergeist activity, there is geometrical formations with that where it's not so random, you know. I think that is the poltergeist activity. A lot of the time I believe it to be like when I'm reviewing things, I believe a lot of it to be fake because they're getting the formula wrong, you know, like they're faking it wrong, you know, like. It's a poltergeist activity is usually very, very organized. It's not so frantic. I mean, from case studies, you know, like people that have been writing about poltergeist activity from like years and years and years and years ago. A lot of people used to like blame poltergeist activity on extraterrestrials, be like aliens would come into my house and like arrange my furniture, you know, and stack it in impossible ways, you know. But really, I think it's a mental energy that's trying to sort itself out and find ways to like put itself in its own back in its vibration. Because, like I said, you can't disperse energy; it just changes. Now, I don't know. Have you ever seen those case studies about, you know, the poltergeist activities and how it's actually really geometrical and very like.
Right. I've heard different takes on it. Right. That there's yeah. more intelligence behind it than just the chaos. Yeah. I've also, you know, heard and I think Dr. Barry Taff, who refers to people and William Roll as poltergeist agents who mm-hmm. have psychokinetic energy that seems to revolve around them. You know, it makes me wonder if there is a poltergeist agent that is an amped up human battery, basically filled with right. angst. Could that be giving the strength to a more intelligent force to make themselves known or to unleash the way they do?
Absolutely. That's what I think is going on. It's quite phenomenal to think about it that way, that we actually have this mental power and to think that like your thoughts, you know, and it affects everything around you, even your environment, even things that are non-living, you know, it's crazy. And that's another thing I'm telling you, like, since I've been doing this type of research, it changed me as a human being, like completely from the inside out to the point where I feel like you were just saying, like, you're a vampire, you haven't changed, you haven't done this, you look the same or whatever. But it's like, because I've been like learning, it's true. Like the paranormal has taught me so much about how to live, you know, like, don't be so worried. Don't stress over like the things you cannot change, you know. Don't marinate and hate towards other people, you know, because right. that shit ages you. That energy bounces right back at you. You know what I mean? Because that the mental thoughts that we have, we can actually, I mean, those thoughts manifest in ways that we are still trying to figure out as like, you know, human beings, as Homo sapiens, the modern Homo sapien. We have not even figured out like the amount of power that we have in our brains, you know what I mean? And how it can manifest and how it can move objects and how, you know, how you can become, you can make yourself possessed. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Do you like the freedom now with Paranormal Caught on camera to be able to examine different aspects of the supernatural, and what has maybe become even more peaked for you than used to be because of this exposure?
I think because I get to now look at different types of footage, things that I, you know, I'm a paranormal investigator, but I get to look now at UFO footage, you know, and, that to me is exciting because, when I'm coming across things that challenge my knowledge, you know, it forces me to educate myself on something that, you know, I didn't know about before, or didn't know as much of about before. And now I'm finding myself to kind of like, okay, well, now I'm not an expert in ufology, but I'm becoming a novice at it. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm, you know, maybe a greenhorn in this area, but now I'm, you know, little by little, I'm learning more and more and more about like extraterrestrials and spacecrafts and ancient aliens, you know, and when I start putting all of that type of stuff that's going on into perspective, it kind of shines a different type of light on paranormal things, you know. Like, that's why I have a different view now of like what a haunt is, you know.
Right.
And now there's so many other aspects to the unknown that, like I said, you open that Pandora's box, you plant that seed, and that tree grows into a million ways. You know what I mean? And so, I mean, like I said, I'm never going to find the answers to anything, Dave. I'm never going to find the answers to anything. I'm
just not with that shitty attitude.
I know, right? Oh, gosh.
Well, how many episodes did you guys shoot for the first season?
So what, I mean, they break it up into episodes. I'm not sure, to be honest. I downloaded it all from like iTunes because I don't have a television. So it just kind of came as like this whole package. But I don't know how many episodes it was, but we're already shooting season two right now. And the way we shoot it, they give us like probably 20 clips to review. I have to do a lot of homework for this show before I go and sit there in front of a green screen and talk for 3 hours. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it's, you know, they, and then they divvy it up. So like, even though I have like 20 items to review, that might be bits and pieces for the first episode of season two, maybe bits and pieces for the last episode of episode two, you know, or season right. two. So they divvy it up how they want to. So I don't really know how many episodes.
I know I think they just purchased 22 more episodes, which is exciting. But well, we wish you continued success with this and certainly seeing you out there. Do you have any other projects that are in the works right now?
Well, sometimes, you know, when you're constantly investigating the dead and death and awful history, you need to break away from the paranormal just to be sane. You know yes. what I mean? Otherwise, it literally, I've seen it like kill people, you know. I'm doing things that are, you know, outside of the paranormal, you know, like I do like music stuff and I work in film, and that's what I've been doing. Like, I'm about to go on tour with a metal band, so that's
very
my
cool
other job.
That's your other job, your release. Well, Susan, it's always great catching up with you. Hopefully we'll be able to see each other soon at a conference or meet up. But thank
Dave,
you for popping
on. It's been too long.
Yes. Yes, it really has. Well, I'll be out in Los Angeles next week for a couple of days. Maybe if we have if they let me free from the bonds of work, I can connect and we can have a drink or have a bite to eat and catch up.
Hell, I would love that.
Good deal. Susan Slaughter, you can find more information. We've got links up to the Travel Channel and the TV series Paranormal Caught on Camera. That's it for this week, kids. We will be back with you on Tuesday with brand new True Crime Tuesday. We'll be talking with the sister of Ron Goldman about the famous Brentwood murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman, O.J. Simpson. So make sure you tune in for that on Tuesday. And if you haven't already subscribed to our True Crime podcast, please do so. Remember, in supporting that podcast helps us to continue to do this show as well. So supporting the products and projects that you like and letting them know that you're watching, listening, and out there is certainly a help all the way around. So go subscribe now for the best in True Crime Talk Radio. True Crime Tuesday, you'll find information at darknessradio.com. And I'll be back Monday through Friday, of course, on the best in Anomalous Talk Radio. You can find me on Midnight in the Desert. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. That was Susan Slaughter. This is Beyond the Darkness.